Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Jeff Feagles, I am John Schmelk.
Hi, John.
201-939-4513. Hello, callers. That's how you get in touch with us and talk some Giants football. I'm sure some of you are still off today if your kids' schools are closed or something like that from the snow yesterday. We were off, obviously, no Big Blue Kickoff. But we're back today talking NFL football and Giants football with you. How'd you spend your snowy Thursday, Mr. Feagles?
I spent it inside looking at... At the time, I'd have to go out and shovel.
Now, did you shovel or did you make one of your mini sons shovel?
No, I only have one mini son at home.
I hope you put up the work.
Yeah, I did. I have a snowblower, which is the man's toy, you know?
I do not own a snowblower. Then again, I'm in an apartment in New York City.
I'm glad I own a snowblower after yesterday, yeah. So that makes a difference. So it's good, you know? But I don't know how you can stay inside for so long and just get bored.
Get stir crazy?
Yes.
Did you watch movies? Did you do a little work? What'd you do?
I was just watching stupid stuff on TV. Yeah, no movies or nothing. But I did a little work around the house, inside, obviously, in the basement, clean up stuff, you know. But it was I was just glad that I was able to get out of the driveway yesterday. And there was a production at the high school last night that we went to, which was good. And the parents all get together and do what's called Jamboree. And it's almost like a Broadway show. Pretty good.
Okay. Well,
so
there
that's
you go.
What I did. Not that anybody really cares about that or wants to hear more about it, so let's move on.
I'm going
to
focus on the Hall of Fame class a little bit today. We really haven't talked about that class much on the show, but we haven't talked to you since the Super Bowl, Jeff. So why don't you give me your 2-3 minute take on the game?
Well, I had talked to you a little bit about the game as far as from an experience factor,
yes.
And I think that came into effect. I was really shocked at how the first half went unlike this team, the Patriots, they didn't turn the ball over much in the regular season, and those turnovers at the beginning of the game really hurt them. But I don't know if you're more impressed with the way that New England came back or the way that Atlanta lost this game. And I think I'm more impressed with how Atlanta lost the game because there were some times in this game when you're sitting there going, where is the running game? Where they got two running backs that can certainly run the football. That last 4.5, 5 minutes left in the game where they're dropping back passing, that was a huge turnaround. I enjoyed the game. I didn't really care, like we talked about, who won it. I didn't want the Patriots to win, but they did. And I just wanted to show you how good of an organization that they really are. But I just felt that the Atlanta Falcons, they had that one in the bag, man. They really did. And if you're a Falcons fan, I think you're upset tremendously, but you got a good team. They're going to be back in force next year.
And their defense is only going to get better.
No question. That Alford guy, I thought he was, I didn't know much about him, but, man, he was a good player. I think that whole defense is going to be – their team's going to be fine, and they'll learn. They'll learn, unfortunately, from what happened. It'll help them going forward.
Absolutely, and you're right. I think there were some play calling mistakes. I think there were some decisions by players on the field, you know, taking a sack, holding penalty. Those type of things are a big problem. But the Patriots Super Bowl champions, and Jeff, one – kind of nugget that's been debated a lot on some of the local talk radio programs this week. And I'm curious to get your opinion because I have mine. Do you believe Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback in NFL history?
I do. I do. I just feel like...
You will put him ahead of Montana and Unitas. And Elway, Marino, whoever else you want to put in that
group. Yeah, I do, because I just feel like that he's just, you know, he's been there so many times. And, in the modern day, the way that the players, the athleticisms and just kind of where other guys could be, I feel like he's the guy. And until somebody comes along and wins 5 more Super Bowls. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of products that go into him. I mean, yeah, he's the greatest quarterback of all time, in my opinion. But you also got one of the greatest coaches of all time. And them two together are pretty deadly.
And this is why I think this type of argument in a vacuum can sometimes be silly. Because how do you judge Tom Brady's career in a vacuum without taking into consideration that he's with Bill Belichick and things of that nature? Well, and the same thing, I mean, how do you judge Joe Montana's career if he's not in Bill Walsh's West Coast offense?
I think they all go together.
It's impossible to take these guys in a vacuum. You have to just take them in the situation they were in and see how they perform. Just one number that I want to give you here. This is Brady versus Montana, because to me that's probably the best argument in terms of who the best ever is, okay? Playoff win losses. Brady 25-9.
Wow.
Montana 16-7. So Brady with a little bit of a better winning percentage there.
A lot more games, too.
Right. Brady made 7 Super Bowls. Montana made 4. Brady 5-2 in those Super Bowls. Obviously, his only 2 losses coming to the Giants. Montana 4-0 in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl touchdown to interception ratio for both players. Brady 15-5, obviously very good, and Montana 11-0, which is also very impressive.
23-34, so another 11 games that Brady played. So he had five more. The numbers. I mean, you look at I agree with you in a vacuum when you're going to do all this. Bottom line, all these guys are the great quarterbacks of all time. They all are.
Absolutely.
Who are you going to rank there? I think it's all a matter of opinion, and I think your opinion and somebody else's opinion, they all could probably make sense. I guess it's just a matter of who you think that it is. And I think it's Brady. I think that. Especially of what he did this last Super Bowl.
Yeah, Jeff, I agree.
I mean, he took it and just said, you know what, guys, we're not losing this game.
Yeah.
And just was just, I mean,
and you know, the funny thing about it, he played poorly in the first half. Absolutely. I mean, whether it was because he got rattled
was part of it.
But he missed some open receivers. He held the ball too long now and then. He did not play that well in the first half. But then obviously his second half was immortal.
And you know, you kind of wonder what goes through his mind at halftime. It's an extended halftime, as we all know.
And
it's ridiculously long.
And by the way, Lady Gaga did a good job, too.
I thought it was
a
very good halftime show. I enjoyed it. There was nothing that anybody had to be, you know, there was no politics involved in it. There was no mishaps. It was clean. And I thought it was pretty good. I know it was long.
And the thing about it, you say there's no politics involved. But she did make some universal statements, but it wasn't. But they weren't political.
Top.
But
yeah.
They weren't political.
Yeah. No,
you know
what
I mean? And I think that was great to start. I think she started with America the Beautiful or whatever she started with on the roof. I just thought it was a very good performance, and I thought it was one of the better halftime performances we've seen. Though I think the last four or five, you've had some pretty good ones. Bruno Mars, I thought, did a good job.
Oh, he was amazing.
I thought Katy Perry did a good job, and I thought Lady Gaga did a good job, too.
I thought Bruno Mars was going to be a part of this halftime show, too.
That was the biggest surprise, that there was no special guest.
Right.
It was just
and
her
I had heard
time.
It was going to be him.
Right.
Would have been fine. I mean, they're very popular, but great show, and she's good. Man, is she
good.
Can
sing.
She
can absolutely sing. And by the way, and I agree with you on the whole Brady Montana thing. To me, and I know this is a boring opinion, and I'd love to get your guys who you guys think the greatest quarterback is of all time. It's hard to compare quarterbacks from different eras. You know, people always make this LeBron.
Yeah, that was my point.
You know, people always – and I agree with you.
Yeah.
People always make this, you know, who's better, LeBron or Jordan? Why can't LeBron James be the best player of his era and be great, and Jordan be the best player of his era and be great?
It'd be easier to compare him that
What's
way.
What's wrong with that?
There is nothing
And then
wrong.
Bill Russell was the best player of his era. He was great. And you go back and Magic and Larry Bird, they were the best players of their era. Do you have to decide, look, I think Jordan's better than LeBron, but why do you have to go back and
just
compare
so you can talk
players?
About it.
It's just a waste of time.
It is a waste of time. It wouldn't be a waste of time if there was a indicator or a something that you could say, okay, this is going to define the greatest of all time at every position, at every player, whatever it is. Here's it in football. The quarterback position has to be X, Y, and Z to be the greatest of all time. Then that's what you could do.
Because guess what? If I'm building a team and I, you know, roll a die, and if I roll a 1, I get Tom Brady, and if I roll a 2, I get Joe Montana, if I roll a 3, I get Dan Marino, if I roll a 4, I get Johnny Unitas, if I roll a 5, I get Roger Staubach, guess what? I'm in pretty damn good shape no matter which one of those guys that I get on my team.
Yeah,
you know
of
what
course
I mean?
Somebody's going to analyze it and say, yeah, you know what, if you'd only roll the 1, you would have got the best guy, you know, so you're unlucky. You got Dan Marino instead of Peyton Manning or someone like that, you know. Because, you know, you can put Peyton Manning in this argument, too. But,
oh, absolutely.
But, you know, yeah, he only has the two Super Bowls, but
by
he
way,
has
he did
MVPs.
And he beat Brady 3 times in AFC Championship games.
Wow.
So, anyway, folks, let us know what you think. 201-939-4513. Thanks for joining us on Twitter. We'll take your calls in just a second. Before we get to your calls, though, go to Giants.com, Giants mobile app, to watch the rest of the show. Want to get your opinion on the Hall of Fame class, and I'll give you the class.
You know what's happening, too, is a lot of these Hall of Fame class guys, these are all guys in my generation that I've been playing with.
Which is why I want to talk to you about
it. Which is even going back a couple years ago with Michael Strahan, and Aeneas Williams was one of my teammates, so was Walter Jones.
By the way, Aeneas Williams, people have problems with him making it.
I don't.
He was an unbelievable cornerback on a bad team, by the way, as you can speak to.
Bad, yeah, we were on that. I was there with him for 4 years, and never seen a guy work as hard as Aeneas Williams.
And he would shut down the other team's best wide receiver routinely.
Just remarkable. The guy was in such good shape. After practice, before practice, what a remarkable player he was, and a great leader. great leader.
All right, so here we go.
All those guys are, really.
Here was the Hall of Fame class. The Veterans Committee, or the NFL version of the Veterans Committee. Seattle safety, Kenny Easley. I honestly don't know enough about him to have an opinion on that one way or the other.
I know that when I played in Seattle, he was very well known there. People loved him. So it's awesome, deservingly so. And you know, and we talk a little bit about this senior committee. Mm-hmm. I like it because it does give those guys a chance, like Ray Guy, to get in on a ballot. It's very difficult for them to get in on the normal ballot.
Because sometimes guys do get forgotten and passed over because of numbers and things like that.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, so number two in the contributor class, you had Paul Tagliabue and Jerry Jones. Paul Tagliabue did not make it in, but Jerry Jones did as Cowboys owner. The question, I guess, here, you can't argue with his impact in terms of the economics of the game,
sure,
business, spreading the game. But can you separate that from the job he's done as their general manager over the last 20 years? So I think that's something you have to reconcile. But if you're looking just at his impact from a business perspective,
he's in.
It's hard to argue it. Now, here are the guys that are more interesting. Another kicker got in for you. So what do you think about Mort Anderson?
No doubt in my mind he belonged in it. I mean, when I was young and in the league, there was a guy I looked up to, and really had good conversation with Morton, and he helped me through some things that I needed to get to that next level.
Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, once you're in the NFL as a punter or kicker for 6 or 7 years, as long as you stay healthy and things are you're gonna have a good career. But it's just making it to that point. But once you get to that certain point in your career, you say to yourself, what do I need to sustain and get better? I went to Morton and asked him about some of the things that I needed to do to get better.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, the mental part of the game. And I know a lot of people don't realize how important it is for a kicker or a punter to have the mental side of the game. But you have to understand that, you know, there is pressure on you. You're only out there 4 or 5 times a game. You got to make sure that when you have a bad game or you have a bad kick, how to mentally prepare, it's just there's a lot of mental training that goes into it. And that's what, in my mind, separates the good guys that last a long time, the Hall of Famers like Morton Anderson, and the guys that just make it 3 or 4 years in the league. They don't do the extra steps to be successful off the field. And what I'm talking about is like sports psychologists, mm-hmm. working your mind part of it and visualizing and things that you have to understand. There was times when I was going on the field because I did a lot of preparation mentally through sports psychologists and visualization. There were times when I was on the field that I had already been in this situation before. Mentally, I'd gone over it in my mind, and it was deja vu. When I got into the game, it was like I've already went over this kick.
Wow.
So, and these were some of the things that Morton Anderson was able to help me with. But you talk about a guy. I know he kicked in the dome. He kicked in, but he was just amazing. Long career, one of the longest in the NFL.
Of course, the kick that will haunt him is the potential game-winning field goal
for the Minnesota
Vikings that could have got them to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And so they lost to the Atlanta Falcons.
And he had not missed a field goal all year.
He was perfect that year. So that's a rough one. Now, remind me, Morten Andersen, was he American by birth or no?
No, he was from Denmark.
And Gary Anderson, was he South African?
South African.
Okay,
yeah.
I was trying to remember. I always get the two confused. Okay.
Yeah. And I think one is spelled with an O and one of them is spelled with an E.
That is correct. Morten Anderson is with an E. Gary Anderson
That's
is with
it.
An O. Very
yep.
good. All right, now we're going to get back to the some of the other
to
players.
To the real football players?
I did not say that.
I
did not say that. I thought about it. I did not say it.
Yeah, I said it
okay.
for you.
I'm going to do the controversial guys last, in my opinion.
Okay.
So, Jason Taylor, any issues?
No.
I thought he was a great player. I can bring up some of his stats if you want, but if you guys have a beef with Jason Taylor, feel free to call up and make your case. But I think he was well-deserving to make it in. I agree. No argument on LaDainian Tomlinson. He's the guy that was the next great running back after the Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders group.
Correct.
And then he was tremendous in the early 2000s, all the touchdowns.
Consistent.
He was
every
just
year.
Wonderful. He could catch the ball, pass protect, he could do everything.
Every year he was just the guy.
I thought he was very well deserving there. Now I'll get to the final two. Kurt Warner, who I think is an interesting case, and I think since he's on NFL Network a lot, people, you know, tend to see him more and there's a better chance of him getting voted in. But, you know, he was great with the Rams. Then he had around 6 years where couldn't even find a starting job in the league, believe it or not. And then he had that final run with the Cardinals where he got back to the Super Bowl. What's your opinion on Kurt Warner's overall career and his induction into the Hall?
Well, I look at the MVPs, I think, are a big part of a quarterback, getting into the Hall of Fame.
And his years with the Rams are as good as any you'll see.
Yep. I think his story and all, it has a big impact on how he got to the NFL, things like that. I know you're probably saying, well, that has nothing to do with football. But
it's part of it.
It's a part of it.
Absolutely.
It's a discussion that I know people have.
By the way, you talk about a story. He bagged groceries at my wife's Hy-Vee growing up in Iowa.
So it's a true story.
It is absolutely a true story.
And I think he was a UPS guy, too, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like that what he did on the field was pretty remarkable when I look at some of the seasons he had. I'm going to tell you right now that I don't have a problem with, I'd say, 99% of the guys that get into the Hall of Fame, because I think that they're vetted pretty well when they're chosen.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of discussion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're not in those rooms and we don't hear what's going on, but I have heard and I've talked to people about it. It is – everything comes out. And so when you get into the Hall of Fame, you are deserving of it by the committee, and I'm with them. So, but I like Kurt Warner. I think that the years he played in Arizona was kind of – that got him on – I know that –
Here's the thing. If he didn't have those Arizona years, I don't think he's in.
No question. I was going to say, don't you think? Because by the time he got to Arizona, you're right. He was kind of – he could have just fallen off the face of the earth, but he – rejuvenated his career. He rejuvenated a franchise in my mind, because I played for the Cardinals. They were a horrible organization. They were always horrible. And then all of a sudden Kurt Warner comes in here. Michael Bidwell takes over that whole organization. And now the Cardinals are one of the best run organizations around the league. They have, and Kurt Warner was a big part of that.
And he did make it to three Super Bowls, won one out of the three, so those are all good numbers. I personally don't have an issue with Kurt Warner getting in. I think in the end he's deserving, but I do think he's one of those close.
Well, I was just going to say, you wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't chosen for the Hall of Fame.
No, I would not. I think he's a borderline guy.
But so are you, what I'm saying is that I would be like, okay, he got in. Okay, I'm okay with that. But if he didn't get in, okay, I'm okay with that too.
I agree with that 100%. I'm with you on that. Now, here's the guy I do have an issue with this year. To me,
running back?
Terrell Davis is not a Hall of Famer.
Well, he had a short career.
He had three phenomenal years, one very good year, two Super Bowls, obviously, and Peter King had a great stat. In playoff games, he averaged 27 carries and 150 yards per game, one of the best averages in playoff history for a running back. That's all great.
Well,
4 years does not a Hall of Fame career make. And it's terrible. It's injuries. I get it. And that's not his fault. I understand that too. But 4 great seasons, I think, sets a precedent now where you can go back in time now and find great 4-year runs for a lot of different guys. Should those guys now be in the Hall of Fame? I think it's a dangerous precedent to set that 4 great years can get you in. Especially, and I'll add one more thing here, Jeff, before you chime in. When he left that Bronco team, you had no names replace him in Denver and rush for 1,300 yards.
Yeah.
Olandis Gary, Mike Anderson, and I'm forgetting the third guy. But there was a third guy that
they
did the same thing.
They had an offensive line that was
– well, and you know, they ran that zone blocking, and that was before they made some of the rules against some of the cut blocking, which a lot of people thought were dirty, things like that. But they had a great system. Again, doesn't take away from the yards and his touchdowns and his Super Bowls. I'm not trying to do that. But it was just for 4 years.
Yeah.
And all those factors when he put together, I would not have voted him into the Hall of Fame.
I'm surprised at Davis because of the years that he played. And again, what these people talk about in those committee meetings was probably pretty interesting because I don't know. Do they show the stats of how many voted for? But I bet it was close.
No, they do not release those numbers.
But I bet it was close.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it was very. In fact, I think that one was probably closer than Kurt Warner's for him going into the Hall of Fame.
I would agree with that.
But again, there are no prerequisites. There's nothing that tells us you have to do X, Y, and Z to get into the. It's all about the committee and who these people feel that are worthy of this great honor. I will tell you that.
And again, they send out a book, guys, that's like this thick to every single guy that has every single piece of information on every candidate when they had it cut down to 15 before the final vote. So these guys do their work. They're prepared.
They are prepared, and I think that there's probably some really good arguments for and against the players that are going in. But again, I feel like he's worthy of it. He was vetted through the system, and I think that. But I will tell you, it does set a dangerous precedence when you play for four. He played 7 years, right?
Well,
seven.
I can give you exactly his number of years.
But I know that that's not a super long career when you look at some of the other guys. But
Terrell Davis had a 7-year career, but in his final 3 years, he played only 4 games, 5 games, and 8 games, and ran for, in those 3 years combined, 1,000 yards. So his rookie year.
He had 1 year over 2,000.
His
right?
rookie year, he ran for 1,100 with 7 touchdowns. His second year, 1,500, 13 touchdowns. Third year, 1,750 with 15 touchdowns. That was ridiculous. And then his 2,000-yard season with 21 touchdowns. And then after that, he dropped down to 211 yards on 67 carries in 4 games.
Yeah,
so
he got hurt.
He had four real legitimate seasons in the league.
Wow. So.
Yeah, and here's the final guy I want to ask you about. He did not make it in. And in fact, when they paired the 15 total players down to 10, he didn't even make that cut. So he wasn't close. And I think you know where I'm going with this. Terrell Owens.
Yeah, he definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Now, here's the thing.
You know, and
I agree with you. I think in the end he gets in, but and I know people say, oh, you worry about the stuff on the field. But Terrell Owens' off-the-field stuff did have an impact on his team on the field because
sure.
It was locker room issues with his teammates. It was being a locker room lawyer. It was players on his team hating him. It was him making comments about other players on his team. I mean, Jeff, you remember this. When he became a free agent a couple times, half the teams in the league wouldn't even consider signing him.
No,
not because, you know, he had domestic violence or anything off the field. It's because they knew you put him in that locker room,
right.
You destroy it.
Yeah.
So to me, that can be taken into consideration when you decide if you want to put him in because it did impact the team's performance on the field.
Well, it has, and it would be really, it's going to be very, very interesting to me next year when Randy Moss is up because he had, you know, I wouldn't say similar, but he had the same, issues, if you will, off the field. I mean, every time he turned around, this guy was blabbering his mouth about this and that. Now, he's done a good repair job with his image lately.
You know, the famous Randy Moss quote, I play when I want to.
Well, that's the truth. There was times where you just quit on routes. I mean,
didn't block.
Davis, I'll tell you what. Owens, excuse me. He was – the guy changed – I mean, he was a hell of a football player.
Oh. Unguardable. I mean, how about that Super Bowl he played on a broken leg?
I mean, he's in every category in the top 5 or 10 in every single one you want to do it.
Can't argue those numbers.
But again, it's what is going on behind the scenes, what is being talked about, and what is impacting that vote. It's his off-the-field stuff. And where does this come into play with everyone? Well, it's not going to come into play off-field stuff with Kurt Warner. You know, that has nothing to do with it. It's the guys that are like, okay, yeah, does he belong in the Hall of Fame? He should belong in the Hall of Fame for what he does on the football field, period. Don't talk about his personal life. Don't talk about off the field. Don't talk about how it affected the locker room.
Right,
then he's in the Hall of Fame.
Right. Owens isn't personal life, though. Everything his issues were with was in the locker room with his teammates.
Where
so to
does
me,
that
that's
have
different.
To come into
right.
to the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Again, there's no guidelines. There's no book that we
well,
open
they
up.
They do say you can only – for football, there's no character clause like they have for baseball. So you don't take that stuff off the field into consideration, but that's why Owens is different because his stuff transferred to on the field. That's why next year, you mentioned Randy Moss, also Ray Lewis is eligible next year. That whole mess at the Super Bowl, whatever happened, that can't be considered because that did not have an effect on the field as far as my understanding of the procedures go. So next year, by the way, you have Moss, Ray Lewis, Steve Hutchinson, who's one of the best guards of all time, Brian Urlacher, and Rondé Barber. So this is not going to get easier. The year after that, Tony Gonzalez, Ed Reed, and Champ Bailey, three guys that are all probably almost definitely going to get in. The year after that, Polamalu, Reggie Wayne, Patrick Willis, three borderline guys in my opinion. And then in 2021, you got, how about this group? Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson, all become eligible in the same year along with Marshawn Lynch, who I don't think is a Hall of Famer, and Jared Allen, who I think probably will get in because of his overall numbers.
Close by, yeah. Yeah, wow, that's a hell of a class.
So these guys that missed now this year, you got a lot of competition coming up in future seasons.
Well,
here,
2019, Jack. Those three guys are right. Those guys are just right in.
Oh, first ballot in.
Yeah,
no
those
question.
Those definitely. Next year, it's Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Steve Hutchinson. Do I play with in Seattle? You don't have to ask me if I ever played with him, so that we know the answer to that one.
And Urlacher and Rondé Barber. I mean, I think four of those guys, three of those guys, I think Ray Lewis, Moss, and Urlacher are definite ins, period. And Barber is probably, and Hutchinson, I think, is my opinion, probably. He was that good of a player.
Right.
Remember, they had that – Hutchinson was the guy that had the whole poison pill contract from the Vikings to get him away from Seattle. That's when Seattle had that great offensive line, him and Walter Jones and Sean Alexander, and they had a heck of a running game. with those two guys. All right, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Let's start with Andrew in New Jersey, Matt, because he wants to bring up something I was going to bring up before I moved on from this topic, but I think he'll do it for me. How you doing, Andrew?
Good. I'm glad you guys are covering this, and I want to say I think Kurt Warner deserves it. I thought maybe he wouldn't make it the first ballot, but the way he played at such a high level, and then, like you said, the Cardinals, but if you saw the last four games he played when he was a Giant quarterback, that could have knocked him out.
Now, Jeff, you actually played with Kurt
with
the Giants,
he was here.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he was when he came here, obviously he was here just to kind of teach Eli the ropes, how to be a quarterback, you know, but we found out what happened there. But I think that Kurt is, when he was here, it was all about doing whatever he could to help the team, which is the way he's always been in his career. He's always been a team guy. So,
and I want to say but the first seven games, Giants were 5-2 at the bye.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Warner was great. He, you know, he wasn't a run and shoot, you know, throwing the ball over, but he was real high percentage, low interceptions, really managing. You know, it sounds bad to game manager, but he was really playing well, and I wanted him to stay as the starting quarterback, like Aaron Rodgers waited behind Brett Favre, you know, for 2 or 3 years, but he killed it himself because he was holding on to the ball. Even Aikman publicly,
yeah,
like saying, "Why is he?"
Yeah.
He wouldn't. Like he's publicly said, I don't want to throw the ball away. I'd rather take a sack. So it's just that little thing. If he would have just threw the, but once they lost the games and they were out of the playoffs, obviously you put Eli. But that's just one thing.
What's your punter point, Andrew?
The only blemish on his career. But you guys are talking about the greatest, and like I was saying, I think Rodgers. I would say that he's greater than Brady because I would say about. Outside of the pocket, but
Aaron
really,
Rodgers is not a better. If they look at their careers, Aaron Rodgers does not have a better career than Tom Brady. Period. Exclamation point. You can't have
the
conversation.
He said outside the pocket, but that's, you know,
but
different.
When I thought of it, actually inside of the pocket too, against the Giants last playoff game, Rodgers, the second touchdown, not the Hail Mary, he did this like ballet dance in the pocket.
Andrew, that's great, but I'm just saying, if you look at their career accomplishments, Aaron Rodgers is not in the same class as Tom Brady right now. If you want to talk about physical gifts, you can have that conversation, but in terms of career accomplishments, he's not even in the stratosphere.
I just think he's a better QB. I would take him over Brady. Another one who's better was John Elway. He was physically better, and he was a one-man show. Like, they didn't really have much of a defense, and he would carry the team. Then when he got older and he lost some of his athletic ability, he became like a pocket passer, and he was good in the pocket. Even Brett Favre, who made too many mistakes, so he's not as good. But
whoa,
when he got older, he became a pocket passer.
Right,
don't even
–
don't even – like, Brett Favre isn't in Tom Brady's stratosphere either. All right, Andrew, on this call sheet, I said you wanted to make a point about punters. What was your point on that?
I just wanted to change it because I didn't think you guys were going to be talking about the a Hall of Fame and the and another quarterback, Steve Young. I think he was as good, if not better.
And look, Andrew, hold on a second. Steve Young is not a better quarterback than Tom Brady. Stop. Stop.
I'm not talking about accomplishments or awards or Super Bowls.
I don't care what you're talking about. Steve Young is not better than Tom Brady.
You line up two, say like Terrell Owens.
All right, Steve, Andrew, you got to move on here or I'm going to let you go. What was your point on the punters?
He lost his point. That's okay.
Andrew, what was your point on the
punters? I wanted to ask who he thinks the greatest punter of all time is, and another quarterback, Jim Kelly. He was also comparable, even though he lost in the
Enough. Andrew, make your point on the punters.
No,
I'm going to lose you.
He just wanted to know who I thought about.
Okay, thank you.
Who do you think is the greatest, and the guy that was on the Giants for a long time? Not Ray Guy, if you compare Ray Guy with, I forget his name now, the guy who whiffed the kick against Chicago.
Sean Landetta.
Yeah, who do you think was better, Landetta or Ray Guy? And I know Ray Guy played in the Dome or in Miami. So who do you think is the greatest of all time?
Well, Ray Guy didn't play in a Dome. He played in the Raiders. which was outdoors. You know what? Ray Guy is probably the greatest of all time. He was a number one draft pick. He's just, you know, he was way ahead of his time. I mean, when you think about what he did has been punting, was so much better than anybody else. And to be honest with you, I don't really know or have an opinion on who the greatest ever was. So I'll just leave it at that. I really don't. I know Sean was a great punter. We all were good punters. I think that one day there'll be another guy in there, whether it's Sean or, you know, Shane Leckler is another guy that comes to mind who, and I'll tell you, a guy that's currently is Johnny Heckert, the guy from now the Los Angeles Rams.
Mm-hmm.
This kid is impressive. I mean, he is going to break every record there is in punting. You watch. So, anyways.
Oh, I want to make the case for Jeff Eagles.
Well,
I need to get somebody in that room to show him your net punting average and compare it to everybody else and show how damn consistent you were
over the
course of your 20-year career.
You know, when you want to go back to what you said when you're comparing people to eras, it's very difficult to compare Ray Guy with Jeff Eagles and Jeff Eagles to Johnny Heckert and guys that are kicking today's game.
Right.
To back, because really, when you look at from a kicking standpoint, is what did the punter do to change or to transcend the game? What did Ray Guy do? He invented hang time, basically. He could hang it up there higher than anybody could ever do it. His returns were limited. He could kick it for the corners, this and that. You know, what did Jeff Eagles do for punting? I mean, my claim to fame was my directional kicking. I was accurate. I could put it wherever I wanted to. What is the next guy? So it's when you compare guys in generations back to 50 years ago to today, it's totally different. There are guys, I had a net average of 40 yards one season. Up until then, there was only two guys in the history of the league that ever did that. If you look at the guys that have 40-yard nets averages in the NFL today, more than half of the guys in the league.
Is that true?
There's no question.
I didn't know that.
No question.
Interesting.
And, in fact, I'd say three-quarters of them do over 40.
Wow.
In fact, Johnny Heckert had a 46-yard net average. That is insane. Insane.
Why do you think that is?
Bigger, stronger, faster, okay. Just like the rest of the league. It really is. It's just like everything has gotten better. The guys – plus, you know, when I was coming into college, there was no kicking camps. There was no training. Guys were – you know what I'm saying? These guys now kicking in the league, they've all been punting since they were in high school to go into camps and getting instruction, and then they go to college and they still go to those camps. We never had any of that. We were just self-taught, you know. So there's a lot to say about guys today getting going to camps and getting instruction and being able to watch film.
I still think, as a consideration, your name should be included in the conversation given your long
well,
career. I know you're not going to say it, so I'm going to say it.
Okay, thank you, John. But I will say this. If my name was brought up and it was put in the conversation, I would be thrilled about it. And, you know, I'm not going to be the kind of person that goes out there and politics for it. I feel that, you know, my body of work is there, 22 years of what I did, and that'll be up to somebody else or some group of people to determine.
You know what we need? We need to get Paul DeTino in that room with the reporters.
Yeah, he would.
Is there anyone better to play your case than Paul DeTino?
Well, put you and Paul in there. That'll be good.
Paul's energy and
Paul
his passion.
Yeah. I'll hire him as my PR.
I think that's what you need to do.
Exactly.
100%. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ashley in Miami. Ashley, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing great. What's on your mind today?
We're a little cooler than you are.
So I had a question. What do you guys think is in it for Victor Cruz this upcoming season? Like, not just from, like, a financial GM standpoint, but, like, I heard he was fourth in catches on the team last year. Like, what's your opinion?
Well, I think that Victor has – I think the team and Victor have decisions to make. I think that the team – you know, it's a tough – they drafted Sterling Shepard to take
right.
Victor Cruz's position, basically. And right now, Victor Cruz is not as good as Sterling Shepard. So you're looking going forward, what's going to happen with him. Obviously, he's not going to make the money that he's going to want with the Giants, because that's just – I don't think the Giants would pay him that kind of – and he's a free agent. I heard that also
Odell, his is going to be up soon, right? And they're going to
couple
pay
years.
Him.
Yeah, Odell. I think that Odell is not going anywhere. There's no way.
Right,
I mean,
no,
they will find the bag of money that's buried in the dirt somewhere for him. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But I think Victor
right?
Cruz is at a juncture in his career where you know, it's not going to be so much up to him. It's going to be up to the market and what other teams are going to want his services, whether it's the Giants or anybody else. So
right. And last question. I know we were talking about Jason Taylor earlier. I'm in Miami, and he was a big playmaker. I remember just a quick story real quick. It just enlightened people. I went to London for the game when – I don't know if you guys remember. It was a couple years ago, and they had this huge – oh, my gosh, I don't even know. It was this huge inflatable Jason Taylor. I don't know if you guys remember seeing pictures of that, but – and I got a picture of it, and I just – it's possibly the greatest moment of my life. So, congrats, Jason Taylor, if you're listening. Congrats, you are loved in Miami.
Well, I want to congratulate Jason Taylor if he is listening. That would be awesome. I don't think he is, but that's good.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ashley. Yep.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it.
And Jason actually co-hosts with Bob Papa one morning a week on Sirius Now.
Oh, good.
I think they're only during the season. I don't think they do off season with him. But and you know, Bob's really right next to me while he's doing a show, so I hear him talking to Jason down the line. And everything seems like a really nice guy.
I think he was a really nice player too. I mean, he was dominant. He was definitely dominant.
Yeah.
You know, he was one of those guys that when you were getting ready to do your game plan, you knew where he was.
Big red Sharpie with
there
the
he
circle.
Is.
Let's go to Oliver in Denver. Oliver, how are you?
This is Alan in D.C.
All right, Alan in D.C.
Okay, Oliver, we'll get to you next. Don't worry.
All right.
What's up, Alan? How are you?
What's going on, guys?
What's going on, Alan?
it was funny to hear Andrew trying to convince you guys that all these other quarterbacks are ahead of Tom Brady.
Well, I mean, Jim Kelly, the guy who hasn't won one. Look, and I love Jim Kelly. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not arguing any of that. But how do you put a guy that has never won a Super Bowl ahead of Tom Brady? I mean, come on, people.
And he just kept rattling off names.
I mean, if you want to say like Staubach or Bradshaw, at least you can make that argument, whatever. That's fine. But Jim Kelly, I mean, come on now.
If he would have said Kerry Collins, I would have been kind of just.
I mean, the league is now – has converted more to a passing league, and even with all that, Brady finds a way to do it with, you know, random guys. I call them random because they never stick around long enough. He's had some, like, really good tools, like Gronkowski over the years. And
Randy Moss a couple years, too.
Guys, but, you know, nobody, I think, that would be Hall of Fame.
Well, Randy Moss, Alan, I want to interrupt you real quick. He did have Randy Moss for about 2 or 3 years in the middle there. That is the only guy as a receiver, wide receiver now, that was Hall of Fame quality. Otherwise, your point is 100% correct. And another thing to add to it, Alan, before you continue, he's also had a number of different offensive coordinators. It's not like it's been him and the same guy for 15 years. He's had a rotating offensive coordinator position there. Charlie Weiss, McDaniels.
Left McDaniels.
I can't remember the guy that was there before, in between the two McDaniels stints. But he's had different guys, too, running that offense. So you're right. He's dealt with a lot of different players over his time with New England.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line, I think I hate Brady just like every other Giants fan, but
you respect
him. You got to respect it. You got to respect what he's done, what he's brought to the game. Going to the Super Bowl as many times as he's done it is just unheard of, and you have to respect that. I mean, I don't care, you know, who you are and what team you pay homage to. You have to respect greatness, and that he's, or you know, top notch in my book. All that being said, you know, another quarterback in the division that I'm really curious to want to know what's going to happen is Tony Romo. I mean, you know, Dak Prescott had a great year, and nothing is going to be taken away from the Cowboys, even though we swept them. But, you know, I don't know what Romo's going to do, and it's really tough. I mean, I kind of see him going maybe to, like, San Fran or the Broncos or somewhere that's has a chance to win. You know, I think he's in his point of his career where he wants to win. And I don't know if he's going to go somewhere like Jacksonville where they're going to have to rebuild a lot more.
Jacksonville's closer than San Francisco.
Way closer. Yeah. San Francisco is not a place that he's going to want to go there. There's no way. But, you know, with Tony Romo, I think the thing about Tony Romo is you have to think he's going to obviously not make the money that he's supposed to in Dallas. So there's a situation where that maybe Jerry Jones says to him, hey, I can't pay you this. You understand.
Well, Alan, here's the thing, and here are the stages. I mean, first, does Tony Romo want to retire? All indications seems to be no.
Okay, so.
Number two, Can the Cowboys find somebody to trade him to with this $20-plus million cap hit?
No.
Will they get anything for him? Honestly, I think it's going to be extremely difficult unless there's a Teddy Bridgewater situation like last year. Somebody goes down. They need a replacement. They'll make a move. That's the second part. Then the third part, will the Dallas Cowboys cut him? And if the Cowboys cut him, and even if they trade him, by the way, I think they'll try to trade him to a team that he wants to play for.
Sure.
But if they cut him, then Romo can go wherever he wants with no money involved. So I think, to me, Alan, once you get to that last thing, let's assume the Cowboys can't trade him, they cut him, they save $5 million on their cap, or if they make him a post-June 1st cut, they save him more, whatever. And then he's a free agent. To me, the best job, in my opinion, for Tony Romo right now are the Houston Texans.
Mm.
Yeah, wow. it would be a good choice to go to the Texans. Texas team out there. You know, so
I hate to be the GM.
that'd be great. One thing I just want to comment on, Jeff. I think you do belong in amongst the greatest punters, not just for your longevity, but just your overall career and how you carry yourself. And
I appreciate that.
Great Giant. So thank you guys, and go Giants.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate the call. By the way, we lost Oliver before. Oliver, if you want to give us a call back, we'll put you right back up. We apologize for that.
You know, I think of the three scenarios, the third is going to be what's going to happen.
I agree with you.
And I think that it's going to be a conversation between Jerry and Tony, and they're going to understand the ramifications of business. This is what we got to do.
And I think the Cowboys will do right by him, too.
I think Jerry Jones wants
Tony Romo to succeed.
Oh, my God, yes, they're going to do it. And I think that's why I said there's going to be a conversation with them, that they're going to understand what they have to do. And then he's going to try to help, talk to some teams about him or this and that. But I don't think there's anybody that's going to be willing to trade. I mean, if you say Houston, they're not trading for him because now they're going to have to take that salary plus Osweiler's salary.
Which is impossible. You can't do that if you're Houston.
So it has to go scenario three.
And then when he signs as a free agent, it'll be for a much lower cap hit, obviously.
What is the deal with that one right there? How do you sign Osweiler to that type of money and he just
We talked about it last year. We thought it was a bad move.
How good is John Elway? I mean, he said, no, I don't want to sign you. You go get whatever you want.
Look, in fairness to John Elway, he did offer him $50 million. All right? So it's not like John Elway, kicked him out the door. He did offer him a decent amount of money, but he didn't offer him whatever, 78 he got or 80, whatever he got from the Texans.
Wow.
And word has it, and this was reports that were out there. I obviously don't know if they're true, that Bill O'Brien had never even studied him or looked at him before. And that was a GM and ownership decision.
Jeez. Well, Tony Romo is going to be on another team, and he's going to try to play next year or this year now. But the guy is 38 years old, isn't he?
Believe it or not, he's Eli's age.
Is he that young? Mm-hmm.
I think he might be 1 year older.
Okay. So he does have but he is so – I mean,
but he's
cannot,
an, he's he can, an old 36.
Oh, man, he cannot get through a season.
Eli's a young 36. Yeah. Romo's an old 36.
Well, Eli has never missed a game.
Correct.
Tony Romo has missed many, many games.
Correct. And back injuries,
That's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think Dallas is going to be able to trade him as much as they're going to try. The question, I think, is how long will they hold on to him in an attempt to hope a trade opportunity presents itself? Or will they just say, before March 9th or whenever free agency starts and say, you know what, guys, Tony, we'll let you go. Go find the team. We'll save our $5 million on our salary cap, and everyone is owned.
Well, I think if you're the Cowboys and you have a relationship with Tony Romo, you've got to do it sooner than later because you don't want to have Tony Romo miss out on free agency period.
I agree with that. Because I think you want to give him the best opportunity.
If I'm Tony Romo, I'm in Jerry's office soon saying, can we figure out what we're doing? Because,
right.
I mean, I don't want to be, around June and July looking to where I'm going to go when Houston just signed, whoever.
Another interesting nugget out there. Now, the Cowboys don't have a lot of cap space, but they can renegotiate contracts.
Sure.
Especially
now. This is about the time when everybody's
doing
it.
Correct. And they have young offensive linemen, Tyron Smith, Frederick. They can push money back on those guys. They're so young, it's not going to really matter. Anyway. DeMarcus Ware says he might be willing to go back to Dallas. Is that something you think they should consider? Now, he's 35. He's coming off back surgery. He has missed games. But in a Dwight Freeney for the Falcons type of role, do you think that would make sense for Dallas to try to give them a little bit more of a pass rush, which, as we talk about all season long, is one of their big weaknesses?
So he is a free agent?
Yes. DeMarcus Ware is a free agent.
Well, you know what? It might be a situation where he's going to have to wait until things happen. You know?
Right. He's not going to make a lot of money.
That's what I'm saying.
So
there's no real reason for any team to sign him right away at free agency, and there's probably more of a reason for them to wait till the end to see what he wants to do. So, yeah, we'll see.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah. This is Charlie.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in that.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, John. Hey, Jeff.
Hello,
good to hear from you, buddy. How are you?
Charlie and me.
Hey, Jeff, my radio partner. Hey, I will take up your cause for the Hall of Fame. I will start tweeting like crazy, and I'll get you in that conversation. How's that?
Okay, right. So, Charlie, here's a good plan. Next year, when you come down here and you deliver Jeff his lobsters, you guys can sit down and you can discuss his Hall of Fame potential. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Let me say a couple of things.
Sure.
One thing about Kurt Warner, there's no way that guy should be in the Hall of Fame. If he's in the Hall of Fame, Phil Simms should be in the Hall of Fame. Period.
You know what?
End of story.
And I think arguing Phil Simms is a Hall of Famer, I think he's in the same category as Warner, as a guy that you can certainly argue getting in. I understand if he's not, but I would also understand if he's in. I put those guys in the same category, Charlie. I think that's absolutely fair.
I agree.
Yeah. And the other thing about Brady, he is not the greatest quarterback ever.
Yeah,
great quarterbacks don't cheat. He cheats. But let me give you this. Otto Graham, okay? He was in every league championship every year from 1946 to 1955, winning seven of those.
Hey, you want to put Otto Graham in the mix, Charlie? I have no argument with that either.
Yeah, he had 114 wins, only 20 losses.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, he has the best percentage of yards gained per pass, 8.98.
Wow, that's some good numbers. Charlie coming strong.
In the 50s.
He had a whole weekend. He had all yesterday.
He had a snow day. Yesterday, he's there. God, Charlie, that's a good job out of you. And I should have mentioned Johnny Unitas. I did not mention Otto Graham, and I should have. That's a great point. No argument.
All right, good. Hey, John, you want to get into this little bet? I'll bet you some lobsters if I can be co-host with you and Jeff on Friday, on that same weekend that I'm coming down to get my ticket and to sit with Jeff in the radio show.
Unfortunately, I don't think I have the authority to offer that. I think I'd have to get cleared with the people above me.
Yeah. There's a lot of protocol to that.
All right. If you can clear it, I'll make that.
Sure.
That,
yeah.
I'm not a big lobster guy. I'm not sure what I would want from Charlie up in Portland. I would have to figure out what delicacy I would want him to bring down for me.
How about blueberries? We have a lot of blueberries.
A lot of blueberries. You know, if
some waffle mix.
If all I'm getting is blueberries, I think I'm on the short end of that bet. By the way,
I don't think I'm going to advise you not to take the bet. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, whatever. So I guess that's what else I was going to say. Other than that, if Ware wants to go somewhere, I'd take him on the Giants. He'd be a great, third guy coming in for a pass rush.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I would always try to avoid a guy that's on the wrong side of 35 coming off back surgery. But again, it would all depend on the price tag, what he would want. And I think he'd be more willing to probably take less money going back home to Dallas than he would be going to another team.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he wants to go back to Dallas. I think Dallas would have him back, but they're not going to pay him $7 million a year to
And he's
come
one
back.
Of those guys that's also a great locker room guy, too.
Sure.
And he can try
sure.
to teach some of your younger defensive
and
linemen.
I think that he also sees the opportunity that the Cowboys, with where they were this year, they're going to be just as good next year, most likely. And he sees an opportunity for him to come and try to win a Super Bowl.
And, Charlie, though, I think you make a good point. I do think there has to be some focus this year, if that's the right word, to finding players, and maybe Romeo Aguara is that guy after what he showed the final four games of the year, to get JPP and Vernon off the field more. They were on the field for too many snaps, and they had to figure it out. Yeah, I agree with you.
Oh, way too much. Hey, guys, have a great weekend. We had about, 14 inches of snow yesterday, but it's all cool. All shoveled out. Maine gets it done, and then, about an hour, we're ready to go out in the streets again. So
thanks, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate it,
Charlie. Great hearing your voice, Charlie.
You know, he almost always calls into your shows. You know
He's,
that?
Yeah.
I think Charlie likes you.
I like Charlie, too.
All right.
We have a mutual respect for each other, I guess.
Let's go to James in New York. He's up next. Hi, James.
What's up, James?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Nothing much, man.
Hey, I just want to make a quick point about the Tony Romo thing real quick before I get into it. I think the team, I think the players, I think the whole organization wants Dak to start, but there's one guy that's going to want Romo to stay.
The Tony Romo?
yeah, there's one guy, and that's Jerry Jones. And I think Jerry Jones is having a debate with himself of who he wants. And, you know, we'll see what happens, but I don't think Jerry Jones wants to cut Tony Romo.
James, you know what? I get what you're saying, and I think he has a soft spot in his heart for him. I agree with that. But if Dak Prescott's not the starting quarterback barring injury week one next year, I will be utterly blown away, shocked, and surprised. I just don't think when you have a guy like Prescott on your roster, you can have a $24 million cap hit on another quarterback when you can use at least some of that money. If you cut him, you gain $5 million on the cap, I think, when you can use that money elsewhere. I just don't see it.
I also, you know, there's one scenario, too, you can think about here, and I don't think there has been one of these guys in a long time, but what about him being like kind of a player-coach kind of guy? You know, I mean, I think he wants to get into coaching.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to do that.
But I just don't – I do not see a team wanting to take a chance on a Tony Romo coming off back surgery who hasn't made it through a season, and I don't know how much longer – what they're going to pay him.
Not at big money, though. If you can get him on a small contract as a free agent, that's a different conversation.
As your starter, though. I mean,
Well, what if you're Houston? You have Osweiler sitting there making all that money. You bring in Romo as a guy that can – teach him and be the temporary quarterback, or at least for a couple years until Osweiler, either his contract's up or you think you can give him the job and he's good enough. That's why I think that, to me, Denver too, with Trevor Siemian's a young guy, you can kind of grow with him a little bit. Those are the two spots to me that make sense for him, in my opinion.
Like I said, I don't envy the two GMs in that situation there. I mean, maybe
pressure.
In Denver. I could see him going to Denver rather than going to Houston. But if you're the GM in Houston and you're going to say, I got to sign Tony Romo because I need you to help my $15 or $17 million guy, that's wow. I mean,
that's kind of admitting a mistake.
Exactly.
Yeah, I hear you. James, what else you got?
Well, the thing is, I don't think he'll get a small contract just for how money's thrown around for starting quarterbacks, but it is what it is. But the reason I called today is, a lot of reputable sites, I mean, I know it's early, but they've been mocking Deshaun Watson to the Giants at the 23 pick. And, I guess, highly opposed to having a quarterback in the first round just because, this last season, this team was really fun to watch. I wish that we could just bring everybody back and maybe just get a tackle and a tight end and maybe a linebacker or two, little changes to come back with the same squad and go and be ready to go. There's a thing like another, it's like Eli, he was under duress. I mean, we all know the problems. I don't think it's time to go first round quarterback at all. I know we got to do our due diligence. And then my second point on the same topic is that when Eli's contract is up, I mean, there's no guarantee that he's going to want to retire, and I don't see a scenario where he's not a Giant. Certain players, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, certain guys deserve to end their careers with the Giants. I feel like he's one of them, so no matter what happens, even if he's playing poorly, I mean, of course, in a few years we should be able to get some type of third round, fourth round quarterback, whatever it may be. But I'm not pushing Eli out the door. That's all I have for you guys today.
Thank you, James. Appreciate the call. I think first-round quarterback's probably a little strong.
Well, let me ask you this.
For this year.
If you're going on the philosophy of the Giants' best player available and he's there, are you picking him?
That's a topic that I talked about with Lance, or was it Paul last week? And here was the point I made. Quarterbacks are so overvalued by teams because so many teams are so desperate for them. I think it's pretty rare when you get to a point late in the first round that the best player on your board is a quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, if that happens, and Jerry Reese and Mark Ross and Ben McAdoo and all the scouts and everybody have a consensus opinion that, look, we think this guy's going to be an 8-time Pro Bowler and play for 12 years, it's hard for me to argue not to pick him. But I think the odds of that being the case and him being on the board, if that's what they think about him, I'm sure another team's going to think the same thing.
Well, if he's there, you got to look at a lot of the things you just said. You also have to look at, you really don't have a proven backup, a guy that,
true.
Obviously, and so Nassib is not going to be here. He's a free agent. Maybe they free, I don't know. Just my opinion. And now you know that Eli has a couple years left on his contract, and maybe that's the kind of time where you say, this is the best player available. He is the Heisman Trophy winner. He's, you know, an amazing college athlete. Let him sit and watch Eli for 2 years. Could be, could, it could happen.
No, good. No, look, it's not impossible.
No,
it's not impossible. No.
But it's probably highly unlikely that you're going to see DeSean Jackson at 23.
Watson.
Correct. Excuse me, DeSean Jackson.
And here's the thing. The thing with a guy like Watson, there's so much projection involved. There's a reason Dak Prescott was sitting there in the fourth round for the Cowboys. And they played in very similar college systems. You know, both mobile quarterbacks, but they're primarily throwers more than runners. And, you know, he doesn't play under center. They're not, you know, making protection calls. Both guys in the same way are really good leaders. Their intangibles are off the charts. But there's projection involved. You have guys like that that work out, end up being great. You have guys like that that don't end up working out, and they're not very good. So I think first round to pick a guy like that when you already have Eli Manning in place. Now, maybe does the Kaiser kid from Notre Dame, maybe if he's there in the second round, who think he has to sit for at least 2 years before he is ready to run an NFL offense,
well,
maybe that makes a little more sense. But I don't think he's going to be there when the Giants pick in the second round either. So,
and I think you also have to look at whoever is there, if it is a quarterback we're talking about, is what system is him, is that, is this a systematic quarterback for this guy? For this, you know, is Watson the guy that can fit into the McAdoo offense?
Hey, look, and you know how wordy
is
the
Kaiser
West,
the guy,
and you know how wordy the West Coast offense too. That is not an easy thing for collegians to pick up. It's not easy.
So, just to my point, maybe 2 years of him learning the verbiage and learning the repetitiveness of the offense, and knowing that in 2 years he'll have it down. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not going to say on February 10th that's impossible.
No, and I also think it's like, where do you go in your philosophy? Is it the best player or is it need? Those obviously are the two things that people look at. Is what do you need or who is the best player? Where do you draw the line in the sand and say, you know what, this year we're not a needs team. We're going to pick the best player. I don't know.
Line four, Chris in New York. He's up next. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Just wanted to say thank you, first of all, for making my offseason bearable every year.
Appreciate that, Chris.
It goes by fast, though.
The occasional game of Madden, I don't drink Drano, thankfully. So I want to thank you for
thankfully,
that.
Thankfully, yeah.
And real quick, at the chance of sounding like Charlie, I feel like we need to get some more offensive linemen, because I know earlier you said Eli is a young 36, but he won't be for much longer. I feel like if he keeps getting hit the way he's in it.
That's fair.
Yeah, so, he got hit a lot this year.
Let me ask you, what do you think the chances are that we sign multiple veteran offensive linemen? Because I know we're kind of trying to win now with Eli being old and all. So if you signed, let's say, Ronald Leary and Riley Reiff, and then, you know, put Eric Flowers somewhere or draft another lineman, whatever the case would be, do you think it's possible that we sign a guard and a right tackle Reiff?
I don't think you're going to sign those two guys because I think they'll probably end up making too much money. Those are two of the top guys at their positions on the market, so I think that might get a little pricey. But could they sign one of those guys and then a lower-level veteran at another position? That wouldn't surprise me. I think that's very possible.
I would say there's probably a high probability of them signing a couple free-agent linemen, okay? But maybe not in where we think, like high price guys, like you just said. There might be one high, whether it's a tackle or a guard. Also depends on what they want to do with John Jerry and Newhouse. They're both free agents.
Correct.
Who do they like, one of those or both of them, to bring them back or not any of them? It's just all depends about the philosophy going forward. But I would bet on the Giants going after a free agent lineman, preferably at the right tackle position and maybe the left guard. That's that in that order.
Thank you, Chris. We got to run, man. Give us a call back, okay? Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go to Jesse in Jersey. He's going to wrap us up on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How you doing, Jess?
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Doing great.
First-time call. I wanted to talk quickly about some maybe under-the-radar free agents at tight end and offensive linemen.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Tight end, what are you guys' thoughts on guys like Deion Sims and Jack Doyle? I think they'd be some upgrades at the blocking position.
Yeah, Doyle stepped in this year with the Colts, right, if I'm not mistaken. He had a couple big games when they lost Dwayne Allen halfway through the year, and he had a couple good games. Deion Sims, look, I think they're, you know, low-cost, low-risk type of veterans you could bring in. I don't mind bringing those guys in and letting them compete with their current guys on the roster. I think that's fine, but this is a very strong tight end draft. I would expect that the Giants will find a tight end somewhere in this draft to come away with that they'll help develop along with Jarrell Adams from last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you rather develop draft a tight end late or pick up one of these guys potentially?
I think you can do both. I don't see why you can't bring in a low-cost veteran and draft a tight end as well. You can even draft a tight end in the first couple nights.
They drafted a late tight end last year
True.
In Adams. So maybe if I had my druthers, I would take a veteran over a late draft pick if he's young enough, just because of experience. That's
great. And then Austin Pastor, I noticed he's a relatively young right tackle out of the Browns. I think a one-year starter. Any thoughts on him? I'm not sure how much he would cost on the market.
Honestly, I got to admit, I'm not that familiar with him. I'd have to look him up. And, Jesse, I'll do that for our next show. I'll give him a look and send me a tweet to remind me. I'll make sure I give you what I know about him. I'm honestly not that familiar with him.
Me either. One-year starter. Obviously,
I think he came in for Schwartz this year. And then I'll take your comments off the line on Joe Mixon, running back out of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He had a lot of a domestic abuse situation. But what do you think about him pairing with Perkins, maybe fourth round or later if he's available, something the Giants may consider? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Look, I don't know how the Giants view Mixon and his off-the-field incident. The thing that got Mixon, that there's a video of it, and he basically, punches a woman right in the face. I mean, it's bad. I don't know how the Giants will look at that. I don't know how they'll treat that. So it's hard for me to really say. He might not be on their board because of the incident. I don't know the answer to that. So
I have a feeling that type of situation, especially in this organization, would be highly looked at, and you'd have to take a what's off the field. You have to understand something about the Giant organization. And the way that they pick and they sign players, it's a lot about character. And the character goes a long way in the Giants organization and building a football team. So when you look at the guys with off-the-field problems, that's probably more of an issue with the Giants than it may be with other teams. So with something like that, you got to take a hard look at, especially these days.
All right, real quick, Austin Pastor, who I found here with the Browns this year, he played right tackle. Pro Football Focus had him a little bit less than average, better pass blocker than a run blocker. So, and he's been in the league for 5 seasons, so he's going to be a free agent. He was originally an undrafted free agent in 2012. So they can look at him. I think that's a young veteran.
That's a guy that will be he'll probably be signed to a decent deal, but he's not going to be a first-week free agent.
I mean, he's been a starter. Well, not a starter. Let's see. He's played 300 snaps last year, 500 the year before, 800 in 2013, then 200 in 2012. So it's like he's been a starter 2 years for sure. The year he had 500 snaps, he probably started about half the games, I'd say, give or take.
But he started for the Browns.
That is an excellent point, Jeff.
So I gotta look at him as
that is an excellent point.
I think he'll have a home. It's just a matter of which team. Maybe even back with the Browns if they like him that much. But I don't see him as being a high price free agent guy.
It's time for everyone's favorite game.
I like this.
Did he play with Jeff Fiegels?
I don't have a great memory.
22 NFL seasons.
Wow.
Hundreds of players.
Fiegels with the Eagles.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
You can make a mockery of my memory.
Here's your host.
That was just so...
John Schmelk.
Now, I think you're going to get this one, so I'll say that ahead of time. That being said...
Brain fuel.
Just water. You're 18 and 13 on the year, though you're on a good streak, and you've struggled a little bit recently. All right, 22 seasons. Here we go. Did you play with Reggie Brown?
Yes.
You did play with Reggie Brown, but what team did you play with Reggie Brown on?
Reggie Brown was a running back?
Was a running back. Now get the team.
God, I want to say it's either the Cardinals or it's the Seattle Seahawks. I'm going to say Seahawks.
You win.
There we go.
You got it.
Well, see, every time you go to that thing, I'm thinking it's a loser.
No,
loser.
I put
Reggie
on some.
Brown, yes, okay, now 34.
I put on some Jeff Wins here.
Four, was he number 34?
Yeah, I think he actually was number 34. Let me see. Reggie Brown, do they have his number here on Pro Football Reference?
Probably not.
I don't see it here. No, but oh no, he did wear number 34. And you got the okay. That is the best job you've done on any of these.
How
you
about
had
that?
Team position number. Boom.
Yeah, now it's starting to. I remember what he looks like.
5-year career with the Seahawks from 1996 to 2000, which is
right in line
when you were with the team.
Yep.
6 foot, 244 pounds. Now, do you remember what college he went to? That's gonna be a little tough.
Colorado.
Fresno State.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
I mean, it was a good guess. Colorado, Fresno State, right?
Dude.
I mean.
You did a great job.
That was pretty good.
He was a third-round draft pick in 96.
Coming on, folks. The memory pills I'm taking are starting to build up. They're starting. It's getting up there. It's good.
Jeff, good job.
Thank you, Johnny. What a great day.
That was a fun show. Enjoy your weekend, my friend.
Yeah, good to talk about a lot of different topics. We always appreciate everybody calling in. I thank you all for all the kudos on punting stuff. I appreciate it.
And we should have Andrew tweet us the rest of his list of quarterbacks that he thinks is better than Tom Brady.
No, I think we had enough of them.
All right, thanks for calling us, everybody. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm John Schmoke. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday right here on Giants.com for more Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you then.